When international marriages collapse and family law disputes erupt, whose court should hear the dispute? That's later. First, to a High Court decision which looks at secret evidence. Imagine trying to argue your case before a court or tribunal, but you're not told the evidence put forward by the other side. Doesn't sound very fair, does it? Well, that's exactly what happened to visa applicant Mr. Amit Kumar. Sydney barrister John Azzie was part of Mr. Kumar's legal team throughout his long legal battle.
Mr. Kumar is a national of Fiji who in 2003 met an Australian citizen and they decided to get married and she sponsored him to come out here.
That was Ms. Rachel Sunita Krishna.
That's it. They came to Sydney, everything was good. They actually got married in 2004 and then shortly thereafter he applied for a permanent visa, spousal partner visa. Then it all went awry. There was a house visit. Then the delegate refused the visa.
He decided to appeal that decision to the Migration Review Tribunal. And when the Migration Review Tribunal was in the process of deciding his case, it received some information which was adverse to his position. So at that point, the tribunal wrote him a letter saying, we've got information which says that your marriage is bogus, but we're not going to tell you what it is.
That's right. And we're not going to tell you who told us.
We're not going to tell you anything about the information, the nature of the information.
That's right. And the tribunal had come to the conclusion that that information it had received was credible and significant and didn't explain to us why it was credible and significant.
Did it invite Mr. Kumar to respond to the information?
It invited him to respond, and he responded by denying that that's the truth of that allegation. I mean, in that situation, I don't think he could have done any more than that, not knowing exactly what that information was about.
It appears that one argument for keeping the contents and source of the information secret was that the informer feared for their personal safety if their identity was revealed to Mr. Kumar. Well, last week the High Court unanimously held that it's perfectly okay to withhold the evidence from Mr. Kumar.
Yes, and in doing so they highlighted the need for the tribunal to keep an open access communication for people who want to dob in. That's good and true in that there's a very strong public interest policy in that, and I totally agree with them, their owners there. The difficulty is that you have to weigh that public right against the private interests, and which are spelled out in the Act. And that private interest says that you must receive particulars of the information that the tribunal deems relevant in affirming a decision of the department not to grant visa.
Traditionally, when you appear before a court, either in any form of litigation or trials, it's open court and you know what evidence is presented for and against your case. But here, the person doesn't know the information, doesn't understand the evidence which is being presented against them, which adversely affects their case.
Yes, that is generally the case. You have to be notified, put on notice of all the information that is weighing against you. But I suppose the effect of the High Court decision in this matter is basically, really, it doesn't matter what the details of that information are. The end result is that you're in a sham marriage. What do you say about that? Which is not exactly the most satisfactory way of dealing with it, but I suppose the High Court had to come down and resolve this conflicting tension between public and private. We just have to accept that.
Do we see this form of covert evidence in other courts and tribunals?
Yes, but in more of a criminal context. Prison informers, for example, and they're in a special category. The issues there arising are basically the reliability of that information when you've got a criminal who's giving evidence against another criminal, and then also the protection of their identity, especially in the prison system. So it doesn't really easily translate in this sort of civil context.
Could it be argued that normally in those sorts of cases, the anonymous covert evidence of a fellow prisoner is not in itself likely to convince a jury to sentence somebody?
Yes. What happens is when evidence or testimony is given by prison informers, judges normally give juries warnings about the reliability of that evidence. But in this context, the tribunal said, no, this is credible and significant evidence without testing its veracity. So it doesn't really translate that easily, but the High Court was nevertheless concerned about keeping an open line of communication between dobbers and the tribunal. And giving them protection. So it seems that irrespective of the veracity or the reliability or the intentions of the DOBA, the most significant thing in terms of the High Court decision is that the information flows to the tribunal. But what the problem with that is it just gives it carte blanche for people to go and DOB in without any ramifications. So you can get all sorts of hidden agendas, people undermining visa applicants because they, I don't know, they had a fight last night, and then DOBbing them in and saying, oh, well, I've got information about this, and without that information having to be tested.
Sydney barrister John Azzi. In the past, there have been cases where national security concerns have been given as a reason for withholding evidence from litigants. But it appears the courts are now opening the door wider to the use of secret evidence. Catherine Biber is an associate professor with the law school at UTS. She says in February, the High Court handed down the K generation decision, which involved, of all things, a dispute over a liquor licence for a karaoke bar.
Well, I mean, there are some similarities between the K generation case and Kumar. In K generation, Mr. Krasnov has applied for a liquor licence. He wants to run a karaoke bar in Adelaide, and his liquor licence is declined, and he appeals to the licensing court in South Australia. And the licensing court receives what they call secret information. It's come from the Commissioner of Police in South Australia, and they don't disclose to Mr. Krasnov what the secret information is, but they say that because there is secret information from the police commissioner, he's not going to get his liquor licence. Now, Mr. Krasnov, as far as he knows, has only got some traffic infringements on his criminal record, so he has no idea what this information is. And again, he argues, look, there's just no way of my knowing what this information is, whether it's reliable or accurate, where it's come from and whether it's true, and it's not fair to use this information against me. And the licensing court decides that they can use this information, they don't have to disclose it to him, and they can use it against him to deny his liquor licence.
And indeed, they make their decision on the basis of this information, don't they?
Well, that's right. Similar to Kumar, both of these decisions are made entirely on the basis of information that's not disclosed to the applicant. So what Mr. Krasnov does in K generation is appeals to the High Court, saying, look, if the licensing court of South Australia is allowed to make decisions on the basis of secret evidence, then it's not a constitutional court. So the real question before the High Court was, is the licensing court in South Australia a constitutional court?
Well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean?
Well, under the Australian Constitution, the courts need to conduct themselves in the usual kind of process of adversarialism, and the parties get to make their cases before the court, and that the court gets to hear the evidence of both parties before making a determination. Mr. Krasnov is making a kind of broader argument that it wouldn't be legitimate in a constitutional sense for a court to function in that way by allowing secret evidence to be used by one party to the detriment of the other party, and for the court to use that evidence as the sole basis for its decision.
And what did the High Court decide?
The High Court decided unanimously that is a constitutional way of functioning, and that courts that function in that way can still be constitutional courts.
So it was perfectly okay for Mr. Krasnov not to get his karaoke bar licence because of this secret evidence, his secret police intelligence?
Well, that's right. They said that in the circumstances, this kind of secret evidence that comes from the police can be used against him and can be used to deny him the opportunity to run a karaoke bar in Adelaide.
I believe that at some stage during this process, lawyers for Krasnov made the point that he and his legal team had less access to information than somebody who was a terror suspect might have.
Well, that's right. I mean, when someone is accused of offences relating to terrorism, there are very strict rules about who gets access to the evidence that's against them, because that evidence fits into that kind of public interest immunity, generally speaking. But a person who is accused of terrorism, whilst they may not have access to the information against them, their lawyers are generally given the opportunity to have a look at that evidence in a quite limited and confined way, but their lawyers do get to look at the evidence that's against them in order to know how they can prepare a defence and how they might test that evidence and whether they can call any other evidence in their defence. So in the Krasnov case, even Mr. Krasnov's lawyers were not allowed to have a look at the secret evidence that came from the police commissioner to know whether it had come from a legitimate source, to know how they could argue against that evidence, or to know if they had anything else that they could prepare to rebut that evidence.
So the commissioner of police, what was he saying was in this police intelligence, and what did it say about Mr. Krasnov?
Well, look, we don't know at all what was in this police intelligence. We do know that the Commissioner of Police said that their broader purpose was to keep organised crime elements out of the licensed premises industry in South Australia. And so the suggestion is that the information has something to do with Mr. Krasnov and whether or not his premises would have any involvement with organised crime or not. But we don't have any information about whether there is a connection between Mr. Krasnov and organised crime, and we don't have any information about whether that was in fact the reason why Mr. Krasnov was denied his liquor licence.
Are these cases, the Kumar case and the K-Generation case, are they a source of concern? Are we striking the right balance between open justice and these other concerns around, I don't know, criminal intelligence and confidentiality?
Well, I suppose the broad concern, in my view, is that the adversarial system that we have is supposed to operate on the principles of natural justice and procedural fairness. Procedural fairness means that the procedure is a fair one, that both parties get to argue their case and they get to see the evidence of the other party so that they can test that evidence and see whether the other party's case is strong or not. So procedural fairness allows a party to see the evidence of the other side and also to present their own case. Both of these cases prevent applicants from doing that by saying you won't actually be able to see the evidence against you, you won't get to test it, and you won't get to argue against it. And it's very difficult then to prepare your own case when it's supposed to be fighting against some evidence that you've not seen. So I suppose from a question of procedural fairness, these are problematic cases, and they do suggest that litigation might not be the kind of evenly balanced adversarial process that we aspire to having.
Associate Professor Catherine Biber.